We normally try to stay pretty grounded here on the Bruce Woolley Show. We try to keep our feet firmly planted on the truth side of the line and bring you the truth every day. But in bringing you the truth today, we will have to delve into the land of make-believe on at least three stories. That is how we begin. Thanks for joining us. And we will start with the situation in Gaza and Israel, where yesterday there was a make-believe ceasefire. About, when did I start to see the news reports? 2:33? Make-believe ceasefire. There was a big ceasefire. Oh, look at the button. And everybody on the left side of the aisle started to laud Joe Biden and laud Antony Blinken and all the Biden administration officials. And what a great job they were doing. Just an amazing job. Look at Joe Biden. He's so involved. He's so engaged. Except there was no ceasefire. The Hamas terrorists announced that they had agreed to a ceasefire that Israel hadn't seen the terms of yet. And it appears from reporting via Axios that the Biden administration knew about the terms of the ceasefire and didn't share them with Israel. Now, this would not be unusual because, of course, the day before, the Biden administration withheld military aid from Israel. And we're now getting a little more clarity on what military aid was withheld from Israel. What we are we'd already agreed to provide it. Now we're withholding it because we're not sure if Israel has conducted the war humanely and has not committed war crimes. That's why we're withholding the aid from Israel. That's the caveat. Have they not opened a refugee center in southern Gaza? They have. Hard to get in there now. You know why? Because the entrance to it was bombed. Well, that doesn't seem a very humanitarian thing for Israel to do. No, it wasn't a very humanitarian thing for anyone to do. And the fact is, Hamas is the one who bombed it. Yes, Hamas bombed its own exit point, theoretically its own exit point, for its refugees because they don't want them to leave. Why would they not want them to leave? Because if they leave, then they don't have anybody to hide behind. Okay, so that's one make-believe story yesterday, the big ceasefire in Gaza. The second big make-believe story is the Donald Trump trial. Now, right now, on the stand in New York City, if you're into reading racy novels, you know, you'll probably enjoy the court transcript because Stephanie Clifford, who she said in court today, prefers to be known as Stormy Daniels. You know you are a sick, demented person when you would prefer to be known by your porn name than by your real name. She is on the stand testifying about, I'm sure, as many salacious details as she can make up or recall from what either was or wasn't a sexual encounter with Donald Trump in a Lake Tahoe hotel room at a golf tournament somewhere in the mid-2005s, 2004, 5, 6, 7, somewhere. Okay, she has written a statement and signed her name to it that this, for which she is testifying, took place today, did not take place. She has written a statement and signed it years ago that what everyone says happened in Lake Tahoe did not happen. Okay. So, make-believe a world where the top, not just one, but two witnesses against Donald Trump are a porn star who for at least 20 years has been getting paid to have sexual relations with other men on camera. That's one of the star witnesses in the case. The other star witness in the case is an attorney, Michael Cohen, who has lied in court, who has lied before Congress, and who I don't know how he's not violating the attorney-client privilege because he's going to testify about things that occurred when he was Donald Trump's attorney, which I would think would certainly be privileged information. And Cohen is going to testify that Trump should go away to jail because he followed Michael Cohen's legal advice. That's the world we live in. It seems like something would happen in, I don't know, Nicaragua, the Philippines, Ecuador, someplace where, you know, they'll stop at nothing and wink and blink and ignore customary laws of equal protection under the law. But this involves Donald Trump, so anything goes. Anything goes. And Stormy Daniels is on the stand now because she knows anything at all about what we presume Donald Trump is charged with, because we have to presume what Donald Trump is charged with, because it's not the felony, and he's charged with 34 of them. None of them are articulated in the charging documents. Now, I don't sit here to tell you that Donald Trump is a great guy, that Donald Trump is a guy who I would want as my father-in-law or my daughter's babysitter or anything like that. But there is a big difference in the American legal system between someone who has done shady things and someone who is guilty of a crime and deserves to be incarcerated. A huge difference. A huge difference. And we want that huge difference to exist because, whether we are aware of it or not, almost all of us probably could be put behind bars for something we've done at some point in our lives that was innocent, that was unintended to hurt anyone else, or certainly not intentional in violating the law. But there's a reason why there's a oft-quoted statement, show me the man and I'll show you the crime. In other words, if I want to find a crime, I can find one. For my friends, anything. For my enemies, the law. I've heard Alan Dershowitz say that before, quoting someone many years older than Alan Dershowitz, who is very old. In fact, older than Joe Biden. So you know Alan Dershowitz is very old, except Alan Dershowitz's brain is not as old as Joe Biden's, because Alan Dershowitz's brain functions. And he, Alan Dershowitz, a lifelong liberal Democrat, has made fun of his case in every way, shape, and form, because it is a make-believe fantasy of Alvin Bragg in the New York District Attorney's Office that Donald Trump should be put behind bars. Here's the last absurdity, the last makeup, make-believe piece of logic, because Alvin Bragg believes Donald Trump should be put behind bars for influencing the 2016 presidential election by doing something illegal in 2017. Donald Trump got in his flux capacitor, flew back in the DeLorean to 2016 and influenced the election, and we've all been living in a time machine, according to Alvin Bragg, ever since Donald Trump enumerated the payment in a certain way in his books in 2017. Okay, the third make-believe circumstance occurs right here at home. Last night, Columbus City Council allocated $8.6 million for nonprofit organizations to provide summer youth programs involving sports, music, gardening, summer school, or employment. There's never too little money to spend on programs. You ever notice that? They always find money for programs. How often do they decry lack of affordable housing? Lack of this, lack of that, not enough money for grants for safety programs or this or that. But oh, midnight basketball or whatever. Sure, here's $8.6 million. Now, they've already allocated, the city of Columbus in other ways, allocated $12 million. So they have a $20 million pot to pull from to treat the kids of the city of Columbus to a fantastic summer. And I don't have any problem with the kids in Columbus having a fantastic summer if, in fact, these programs were going to make an appreciable impact on crime. The $125,000 that they gave to mothers of murdered Columbus children, I have no issue with that. I think that's a great organization. I think they do great work. But the way they talk, not the mothers of murdered children, but the way the city and the mayor talk about the homicide rate in the first quarter of this year, 25 homicides in the first quarter of this year, 8 of the suspects in the 25 homicides in the first quarter of this year, eight suspects, so eight murderers between the ages of 11 and 18. 11 and 18. Could anything speak more clearly to the hopelessness of Columbus youth in this city? Linden, Hilltop, Near East Side, other areas. I would just need someone to sit down and show me how the allocation of $8.6 million, or $20 million, which is what it really is, will make an appreciable difference and will keep kids between the ages of 11 and 18 from believing that violence and crime is the answer to the solutions in their neighborhoods. I think that money could be spent much better in other ways. So Stormy Daniels has no purpose on the witness stand today except to embarrass Donald Trump. The whole theory of the New York case with Alvin Bragg is, I'll get around to the felonies, I'll tell you later, but first of all, listen to how bad of a guy this guy is. Like, that is the whole entire process, and it has a dual process, a dual purpose, rather. The first purpose is maybe we'll get the jury to think Donald Trump is such a bad guy that they won't pay any attention to the fact that we don't enumerate the crime, and they'll convict him of something. Then we can say he's a convicted felon. Then Joe Biden can dodge debating Donald Trump because Donald Trump is a convicted felon. That's one purpose. The other purpose is just so that voters can hear this and maybe swing voters can hear, oh, my goodness, I had no idea this guy was this kind of a guy. I can't vote him. Actually, there's a third purpose, and the third purpose is to keep Donald Trump off the campaign trail. Because if Donald Trump is on the campaign trail, he's talking about Joe Biden. Now, he should be talking about Joe Biden when he shows up for court, but he was not talking about Joe Biden this morning. And again, I've said this and said this and said this, that Donald Trump, if he wants to be effective, make the best of a bad situation, then Donald Trump has to start talking about things that Donald Trump wants to talk about, not talk about things that the media wants to talk about when they are shouting questions at him when he comes to court in the morning. In other words, he needs to take a page out of the playbook of the best at this that I ever witnessed in my life, former Ohio State football coach Jim Tressel. Jim Tressel was extremely frustrating to cover because you'd leave his press conference and you'd have a notebook full of quotes and you'd get home and you'd look through it and you'd be like, there's nothing here. There's nothing here I can use. And I caught him one time on my way into his press conference, sitting in his car, meticulously writing out things in a notebook. What was he writing? Not plays, not strategies. Well, I mean, he was writing out his answers to his media. He was going over them. He was writing them out. And if you write something down, you have a better chance to remember it than you do if you just wing it off the top of your head. But Tressel was a genius at this. So Trump needs to take a lesson from Tressel and talk about what Trump wants to talk about. And what I wish he would stop talking about is how unfairly he's being treated in court, and talk about myriad things the Biden administration is doing that put Israel at risk or are proven inept on college campuses or raise prices at the grocery store or keep people from buying homes or any number of things. But instead, this is what we got from Trump when he came to court this morning.
The country is on fire. There are protests all over the country. I've never seen anything like this. Many graduation ceremonies are being canceled. They're canceled, as you know, in Colombia. They're canceling a lot of them. And we have a president that just refuses to talk because he can't talk. You know that. And so does everyone else. Some of the statements made about this witch hunt on CNN, fake news CNN, Michael Moore said the proof of falsifying records has not been accomplished. On Good Morning America, they said, we heard that expense payments to lawyers are legal expenses. You pay a lawyer expense payments. We didn't put it down as construction costs, the purchase of sheetrock, the electrical cost. The legal expense that we paid was put down as legal expense. There's nothing else you could say. You don't have to put down anything, I guess. But we put down legal expense was legal expense. Is that a correct statement, Mr. Attorney? And everyone's saying, oh, gee, That's the fraud. That's what they're trying to get us on. The fact that we call a legal expense a legal expense. They marked it down in the books. The check was signed. And the other thing, this was approved by all agencies. Everybody saw this. There was nothing being hidden at all. That's what they're all writing now. There's been nothing hidden. And it went through agencies, and I guess it went through the IRS also. It went through IRS. It went through the FEC. It went through everything. Also, NBC Today Show, the challengers.
You want to hear more? You want to hear about the NBC Today Show? Do you want to hear more about that? No, of course. You're exhausted. I'm exhausted. And I want Trump to be found innocent. And you want Trump to be found innocent. And we're all exhausted because he's talking about himself instead of talking about things that could drive the attention onto where the attention must lie if Trump is to return to the White House. And that is Joe Biden and his failures in office. Now, Trump was fined $1,000 yesterday for again violating the gag order. No biggie. Except that if the judge decides that, look, he's not taking these fines seriously because I keep fining him, and for a billionaire, $1,000 fine is not a big deal, then I might have to put him in jail. Well, you can't really put Donald Trump in jail because he's a former president. He's got Secret Service protection. But what you could do is confine Donald Trump to house arrest. Now, that would be terrible for Trump because then he would not be able to have the one day, the one weekday that he has to campaign around the country. Because if he's under house arrest, he'd be under house arrest on a Wednesday when court is adjourned, not just under house arrest on Monday and Tuesday and Thursday and Friday when court is in session. Here's Andy McCarthy, Fox News, talking about how a Trump under house arrest could work and how it could limit the 45th president of the United States in his attempts to be the 47th president of the United States.
I was thinking yesterday a middle ground might be that you could have home confinement, which would not actually, you know, there's worse places to be confined than a duplex at Trump Tower. But if it's for any duration of time, it really does put a crimp in his style. You know, he wouldn't be able to go out and use Wednesday for political reasons, for fundraising, for rallies. If he kept it in effect over a weekend or two, he'd be hampered in that way. So he could, you know, conceivably hurt him. But the downside for Democrats on that is it would be so obviously intended to harm his ability to campaign that it would look even more political than this case already looks.
I'm not sure they care about that. I mean, it would look bad, but I'm really not sure Democrats care about that. I mean, this case is a joke. When you don't announce what the crime is, and when you have to take a misdemeanor, which if this bookkeeping error actually did occur, it was a misdemeanor when it occurred, and the statute of limitations has long since expired on it. You have to show that it was done for some purpose that they still have not charged Trump with in order to convert it into a felony, and they've overcharged him with 34 felonies. So it is a joke, and the Democrats don't care. We wouldn't be at this point.